I'm Dr. Fiona Lovely, and this is the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. I'm taking the taboos of menopause and perimenopause and bringing light to the dark. No bullshit, no shame. It's time for us to gain a new paradigm in female health, out with the old and in with the new, and I'm bringing fresh perspectives from someone in the arena. I've been practicing women's health for nearly 20 years, and I'm spilling the tea on what it means to live at midlife, knowing that the best is yet to come. I'm sharing my Gen X approach to living through this transition, sassy, a bit sweary, and always honest. Tactical tips and instantly usable information is my aim. I hope to make you laugh and that you learn something new that helps you embrace the change. Together, we bring power to the peri. Onward to the podcast. Hey, hey, listeners. Dr. Fiona Lovely here, and this is the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. And I have a really interesting conversation to share with you today. I recently had this awesome conversation with Morgan Adams, who is a certified holistic sleep coach. Isn't that so interesting? We had a robust conversation where we talked about a number of different elements of sleep, but some of the most interesting parts were the psychology of sleep. And we had a chat that talked about tools for women that are having trouble sleeping, which is a very common symptom, of course, in the menopause transition. And she had some hot tips for us. She talks about managing the circadian rhythm, gave some tips around wake time and going to sleep time, and which one's most important, and it might surprise you. And just the conversation around circadian health. And this is one that is really such an interesting conversation, and it's just not getting talked about enough. You know, certainly you've heard me talk about sleep hygiene habits here on the show, but this was a whole other level. If you struggle with sleep, if this is part of your perimenopausal and menopausal symptomatology, you might want to have a listen to Morgan Adams in this conversation. Morgan Adams is a transformative, holistic sleep coach who empowers women to conquer their battle with sleepless nights without reliance on sleep medications. With her powerful sleep toolkit, Morgan not only ensures that women experience a profound enhancement in their sleep quality, but she also guides us to rekindling our relationship with sleep, paving the way for less stressful and more fulfilling days. Having struggled with insomnia and dependency on prescription sleeping pills for almost a decade, Morgan intimately understands the profound impact sleep has on one's quality of life. Morgan's resilience shines bright as a two-time breast cancer survivor. This experience fueled her advocacy for a lifestyle rooted in disease prevention. Her wisdom and guidance extend far beyond just sleep as she champions holistic well-being in all aspects of her life. You can find out more about Morgan at morganadams.wellness on Instagram, and I will drop the other links to reach out to her in the show notes. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. It's important to me that the supplements I use are of the highest quality, and that's why for more than 3 years, I've been drinking AG1. It is researched and developed by an in-house team of scientists, doctors, and nutritionists with decades of experience in their respective fields. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, and rigorous testing. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. It's easy and fast to use. Drinking AG1 mixed with water in one scoop a day covers my nutritional bases. Prebiotics, probiotics, digestive enzymes for gut support, B vitamins and rhodiola for energy support, folate, magnesium, and ashwagandha for stress support, and vitamin C and zinc for my immune health. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1.
Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D plus K2 and 5 free travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/FionaLovely. That's drinkag1.com/FionaLovely. Okay, it's Dr. Fiona Lovely here today of the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast, and I'm thrilled to be joined by certified holistic sleep coach, Morgan Adams. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here, Dr. Fiona.
Well, thank you for coming. I have to say, when I got your email, can I come on the show? I was really excited because sleep has been my primary, or lack of it, perimenopausal symptom. At the age of 50, I can look back now and see that my sleep disruption started at about the age of 37. And so I was just so excited to have this conversation with you because I know I'm interested in the information, my patients are interested in the information, and so are the beautiful women around the world that listen to the show. So thank you for coming on the show.
Yes, very excited to talk all things sleep. My
amazing
topic.
amazing. I love it. Okay. How did you find yourself a sleep coach?
Well, it dates back to close to 20 years ago when I actually had insomnia. So I was in my mid-30s at that time, and I was dealing with a relationship issue. I'll leave it at that, which caused me a lot of stress and anxiety. And it resulted in me having trouble falling asleep. So I would lie there many nights, most nights, an hour, 2 hours waiting to fall asleep. It's technically called sleep onset insomnia. And if you've had it, you know it's a big pain in the butt. Very frustrating. So after a couple months of this, tossing and turning, I decided to visit my primary care doctor. And I was given a prescription for Ambien. And at this time in my life, I was a pharmaceutical sales rep. So the world of, you know, medications was not, you know, not unfamiliar to me. So it seemed very normal and natural to accept a prescription. What's the big deal? So I accepted the prescription, took the Ambien. I did fall asleep faster, so I was relieved of that burden. However, I had a lot of side effects from it the next day. And actually, even immediately after, I had several late night eating episodes that were not good. But the next day consequences, I think, were probably the worst because it caused me a lot of brain fog, a lot of just sort of grogginess that I didn't really feel fully alert and awake until close to lunch. It did start affecting my work. I was working at that point, a state health department, where I was responsible for a lot of the communications and the writing and the PR and writing very quickly on a deadline. And I recall several times being assigned something that had to get turned around quickly. I'm staring at the keyboard. Oh my gosh, what am I going to write? You know, I was just not up to speed. This went on for about 8 years, the Ambien use. And then at that point, I met a man who was, I was just starting to date, who is now my husband. And at that point in the early stages of our relationship, he said, you know, Morgan, when you take those pills before you go to bed, you kind of act like a zombie and it freaks me out a little bit. And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, I just got called out in a very nice way. And so it was at that point that I decided, you know, the pills have to come to an end. And I went rogue. I basically just cut the pills in half into quarters, tapered myself off. Because I'm a person with a lot of grit and determination, I was able to do it. It wasn't easy. And so I want to just say, just a sideline here, if you are taking a sleeping pill or any medication, please go to your prescribing provider and get some direction on how to get off of that pill, because it needs to be done in the correct way. Sometimes you have issues with abrupt discontinuation, rebound insomnia. I won't go into that in depth, but please do, you know, consult your prescribing provider. Anyway, I got off the pills. All was good. And then fast forward to March of 2020. We all know what happened then, right? Mm-hmm. I started to have problems sleeping again. And I got really concerned because I did not want to go down that road of insomnia. So I started to Google sleep and do a little research and started applying these things to myself. And I was able to get my sleep back on track pretty quickly. And in the meantime, while I was doing this, I started to just post on Facebook organically. Hey, I've been having trouble sleeping. Here's what I've done. It's helping. And a lot of people in my circle at that time during that early pandemic phase were like, gosh, I'm having trouble sleeping too. These are helpful tips. Thanks for sharing. And so this was, now we're in like late 2020. And I just got so fascinated with the idea of sleep that I decided that I really wanted to make this into like a business, right? I wanted to actually help women with their sleep. And 2 years before this, I had gotten diagnosed with breast cancer, which, you know, we won't delve into unless, you know, we want to, but long story short, that diagnosis of breast cancer really changed the way that I looked at the rest of my life in terms of what do I want to do for my career? How will I be fulfilled in the last half of my life? And I knew I wanted to help women with their health, but I just wasn't sure how that would play out. And then this fascination with sleep really kind of kicked off this whole, I need to go do this as my mission. So that was, yeah, late 2020. I started to, well, of course, you know, I decided I wanted to do this sleep coaching thing. Well, then, well, how do you do it? You know, it's like, it's one thing to say, I want to do this, but then you have to get down to the brass tacks. Mm-hmm. So sleep coaching is a relatively new line of work. I mean, we have health coaches, we have nutrition coaches, personal trainers, all that stuff. But sleep has been sort of like a little bit behind the curve with professionals as far as like coaches. So I ended up getting a health coaching certification and then several other different sleep certifications to kind of round things off because I had not found one certification program that just addressed everything I needed. I had to kind of piecemeal, which was fine. So then in 2021, after all of this research and certification, I got started. And my practice currently is helping women one-to-one who have insomnia, sleep problems. They want to optimize sleep, kind of that continuum. And my main focus has been on midlife women. I think because I'm in midlife, like attracts like, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say the bulk of my practice is women 40 to 60. So mm-hmm. it's been very fun, very fulfilling, you know, a mission long in the making for me.
Oh, I love this. So there are so many things I would like to sort of pull apart and sure. look at a little bit here. First, I want to say, bravo to you for marrying the man that was brave enough to say to you, this frightens me a little bit. I mean, that tells me a lot about his character.
Yeah, right? Very much so.
So, and bravo to him for being that guy that was able to say that to you. And my next question about that is, I think that particular medication you mentioned, there was a class action lawsuit about it because people were acting really odd on it. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. Well, what I do know about Ambien is that they did put a black box warning on it in 2019 because people were having episodes of sleep driving.
Mm. Oh, God.
Situations where people are put into danger, endangering themselves or others. I mean, I reflect back on that time and I didn't get behind the wheel after taking the pill. However, I did go to work the next day driving downtown. I do believe that there was residual medication in my system. And interestingly, I find this out all later, but in 2013, which was like a year before I stopped taking it, the FDA demanded that the makers of Ambien issue a prescription change for women. Basically, they figured out that women were being overdosed on Ambien. So they basically cut the prescribing amount down. So in essence, during most of the time that I was taking Ambien, I was getting too large of a dose for a woman, mm-hmm. which is kind of scary. So yeah, there can be some serious safety issues that can arise if it is being used for some people. I mean, it's not like run of the mill everyday happenings, but it can happen. So
I remember that. I remember that whole dosing
You do,
conversation around women. I do. And, you know, even at the time, what we know now is that, you know, women have been left out of medical research. The reason being, my understanding, is because of the potential of pregnancy at any time, but also because our hormones make our bodies very unpredictable. And so I think it was shocking to me to learn as a clinician, you know, 20 years ago, some such thing, whenever I learned this, that women's dosages and dosing is based on research with men, like the idea women are just little men, which is just quite absurd, isn't it?
Very false. Very false indeed.
Very
yes.
False.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, it really is quite silly. But I want to just repeat what you've said. If you are listening to Morgan and I having the conversation today, and you are taking one of these medications, there's several of them, I really want you to speak to your doctor if you'd like to have an alternative or want to come off it. Speak to your doctor or speak to your pharmacist. They can tell you how to work on reducing the dose, titrating it down, because as Morgan has pointed out, you do not want to cold turkey these things. You will be in a mess of trouble if you do. So please, I encourage you to reach out to your healthcare provider, your prescribing physician, whoever is the person that you trust with this, and ask for help with this. And there is no shame in it, but there are lots of alternatives. And it sounds like you went about the business of discovering what they were.
Yes, yes, definitely. So when you look at the recommendations for treating insomnia, what you'll find is that CBTI, which is cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, is actually the gold standard before sleeping pills for treating insomnia. CBTI is something that came about in the mid-80s, I believe. And it is unfortunately not well known very well in the medical community of primary care doctors. So quite typically what I'll see is somebody will go to their primary care doctor and they will either get one of two scenarios happening. So the doctor will give them like a list of sleep hygiene tips or a sleeping pill, or both, right? And a lot of times the physician doesn't know about CBTI. And if they do know about CBTI, they don't know who to refer to. And unfortunately, there are not a lot of CBTI practitioners out there. Now, they are able to be found, and they are typically psychologists as a rule, and the wait list can be quite long. So there have been things springing up for online, you know, app-based CBTI programs. And I found myself very interested in CBTI. I wish I had known about it when I had insomnia, but I ended up getting a little mini certification in it, going to some trainings with some people who kind of were the grandfathers of CBTI. And I incorporate some of that work into my practice because I think it is really powerful. And, you know, a brief way to describe CBTI, it is helping somebody change their behaviors and attitudes around sleep without having to use medications. And the success rate is quite high, but it can be a little challenging at first for a lot of people because you are asking them to change some behaviors that are pretty ingrained in them. But it is the most effective way of dealing with insomnia, and it's lasting, and it doesn't have side effects like the medications. So I just want people to know that there is something else out there other than sleeping pills that is really effective, CBTI. So
interestingly enough, this is actually the first time I've heard that. I did not know that that was the gold standard for insomnia. Yeah,
it is.
So when I stepped into my doctor's office and said, I'm having sleep issues, I knew I didn't want sleep medication. So I wanted to hear her opinion. I figured I could probably figure it out. I wanted to hear what she would suggest. And I actually stepped in and said, could my progesterone be low? Should I be adding progesterone in? And she actually agreed to it, which was fine. That worked out for me, but I know that's not the case for a lot of women. And so if someone's listening and wants to find, let's say, a CBTI practitioner, in their area? Can they, is there a registry? Should they reach out to you? Are you able to help with that? Please talk about that, please.
Yeah, so there's something called the Society for Behavioral Sleep Medicine. So if you go and just type that into Google and then CBTI, you should be getting like a list of people who are certified in it. I am not on that list because I do not have a license in psychology or social work or, medical degree. The way that I use CBTI is slightly different than I think what you would find on those websites, and I'll explain what I mean. So I consider myself a holistic sleep coach, and so I take into account many, many different factors of a woman's life. I'm taking into account their nutrition, their movement, their chronotype, helping them with routines, morning and evening routines, and really just looking at them from just a more holistic perspective and using those CBTI techniques when appropriate. Whereas, like the typical person who is on the CBTI therapy, registry that I just mentioned. Now, for the most part, I can't speak for all of them, but in my experience, it is a very, they're looking at it from a very narrow lens. So they're doing that type of treatment and that type of treatment only for the most part. And I think sometimes they're missing some things that are pretty important. So it kind of depends on what area you want to go. And, people can reach out to me. We could talk about it. I could let them know if they seem like a good candidate. We could work together, or I could refer them to somebody else. But just to let everyone know, there are other options out there. And if you can't, afford someone like a therapist or a coach like me, there are apps out there that are, very inexpensive that are available for people. I guess the downside of the app is that you miss the human contact for most of these apps, and that is actually pretty important, I think, when you're working to heal insomnia, because nothing can substitute that human connection, that actual reassuring voice and personalized guidance, because people are so unique. And but one of the things that I've kind of run up against with this the CBTI protocol is that in my training, it seems a little rigid in many ways. I personally feel like allowing some flexibility in the protocols has been helpful with my clients because I'm really a firm believer in meeting the client where they are, right?
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
if you have an agenda where you're trying to get them to do X, Y, and Z and they're resistant, the whole thing is going to kind of be in shambles. You have to really tweak things for the particular person, which is, where I think the way that I work shines in many
Yeah,
ways.
absolutely. What you said is really important because we're breaking molds on the rules of society around this stuff, right? It's that, for me, I use the example of going to see my doctor for hormones, but what she said to me about giving me progesterone was that basically you're too young for it. I wasn't. I was probably at that time probably 45. So she said, I'm going to have to send you to a gynecologist, which then I waited like a year to get that referral. And the gynecologist was like, why are you here? Like, this is silly. So, there's just not everybody knows. And again, that's that if I only stuck with the medical model, but I didn't, right? I now have a prescriber that's separate from my GP that whose focus is the hormones. So for me, as a professional, I'm a chiropractor. My job is to take care of people's musculoskeletal health and their brain, it turns out. But early on in my career, the women pulled me into the women's health arena. I had the information because I had learned it for myself. And that's how I became this. So I love that whole crossing over and pulling things from different disciplines because it's so important to meet somebody, like you've said. To meet somebody where they are, they're going to have different needs. And if you're always sticking to, these are the rules, you're going to get some people well, but some people will, it's not that they're resistant to it. It's just we all come from a different spot, like we all do. And Yeah. Anyways, that's what I want to say about that. So I love what you said there about you've sort of extrapolated what was really good from the CBTI training that you did, and you mixed it in with the holistic sleep coach goodies. I love that.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, mindfulness has been a really important part of my practice, as well as helping people with their circadian health. When I went to my last CBTI training at University of Pennsylvania in the fall, I actually brought up a question that sort of challenged their stance on, there's this whole, you know, sleep drive and circadian rhythm are the two things driving our sleep system. And the traditional CBTI folks are very much like, it's all about the sleep drive, right? And they would kind of minimize the circadian aspect of it. And when I asked a question that was challenging, it was just met with like, oh my gosh, you're a heretic. So, you know, but I feel like you can't deny the power of managing your light and dark patterns, light and dark, you know, use. You can't Absolutely. Minimize that. And also there's such value also in mindfulness practices to alleviate some of the anxiety and stress that comes along with insomnia.
Is there ever a lot of it? Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, to your point, it's like there is a way to kind of blend in a lot of different techniques and frameworks to meet that person where they are.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And so that they can respond in the best way.
Yeah. Now, will you share some of these mindfulness techniques with the listeners?
Yeah, there's several. There's breath work, which I think a lot of people are familiar with. Meditation is another one. Progressive muscle relaxation is one. And there's a sort of a mindfulness philosophy that I like to follow that really helps people accept the uncomfortable feelings of insomnia, right? I think a lot of times we're fighting so hard against it, we resist. And I think that people don't understand sometimes that sleep does not respond to effort, right? And so we, like a lot of things in life respond to effort, right? You know, we want to play basketball. Well, we throw a lot of balls over the hoop. You can tell I'm an athlete, right? I don't even know the verbiage for this. But no, if you're a tennis player, I'll speak to that. Yeah, if you're a tennis player, you have to like serve a lot, you know, you have to do a lot of backhands to get really good. And the same thing with like your profession, like you studying what you're doing, you have to see a lot of patience to get really good at what you're doing. And that does not apply to sleep, right? The harder we work at sleep, often the more it backfires. The more we struggle, the more we try, the more it backfires and works against us. So really kind of coming at the mindset piece from that angle and really allowing people to give up the struggle and to accept the uncomfortable feelings, and then to have a lot of grace and self-compassion with themselves when they can't sleep or when they're feeling lousy the next day.
So, the self-compassion thing you just said, I want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I find that women in this age group that you're talking about, which is my patients as well, we are not very good at that one. We were not taught that kindness. We were not taught that self-compassion. I suspect it had something to do with the way our parents were raised and the way we were parented. Because, you know, I'm talking about Gen X here, although there are some millennials sort of edging into that as well. So, you know, how do you teach yourself? Because I remember those early days of struggle, and I would fall asleep fine, but then I'd wake in the middle of the night and I could be awake for 2 hours. So I just learned to turn on my tablet and read my book. But I remember in the early days just being so frustrated with that and that sort of anger that came from that. And now I see it all and I go, okay, this is perimenopause. Like, this makes sense. Like, there are things you can monitor through perimenopause that will explain what's happening. It doesn't make it any easier if you science make it scientific. Doesn't make it any easier when you're struggling with it. But I think the tools of learning good sleep, like good sleep hygiene you talked about, and circadian health, beautiful. It's a beautiful way to say it. We're learning so much about it. I think thanks in large part to the Huberman Lab podcast, who he's teaching us so much about it.
Yeah.
Right. So he's taught me so much about it too. So we're looking at it in a different way. We're saying, okay, how can we gain the tools? How can we give ourselves the softness we need to just take care of ourselves, but how do we get the tools?
Yeah, and so many of these tools are free. You know, I think that as a sleep coach, you know, I'm getting like a lot of ads shared on my feeds, gadgets and supplements, and you know, just and companies are reaching out to me, sending me things to try, gadgets, headbands, and the like. And you know, all that's fine. It's fun to experiment with these little gadgets, but I think we really lose sight of the fact that a lot of the most basic powerful tools to fix our sleep are like right under our noses and we don't even see it. And they're free and they're accessible to everybody.
I love that.
You know,
I love that.
So, but yeah, it's fun. Yeah. Go ahead.
Can you give us like, I mean, you talked about meditation and the mindfulness, like give us two tips that are like hot tips. Like what can women do right, now to get better sleep?
Here's a hot tip. I got a few.
I love a hot tip.
I bring tips.
You bring tips.
I know people want to get right to it.
Yeah.
So I would say the first thing that I would do if I was struggling with sleep is work on managing my circadian rhythm. And the reason I say that is because that is something you can control, right? So what I mean by that is a couple things. You can wake up at the same time every morning. Waking up at the same time every morning actually really strengthens your circadian rhythm and gets you into a better rhythm overall. It actually, interestingly enough, helps you become sleepy around the same time each night. So quite often I'll see all these sleep tips and whatnot, and they'll be like, go to bed and get up every morning at the same time. Well, they've got it half right. Okay. We want to make sure that we have some consistency in our bedtime, but our wake time really is the thing that you want to be really focused on. And if you have a consistent wake time every day, our bodies don't know the difference between Saturday and Monday. So you get up at, you know, a certain time every morning, and 16 to 17 hours later, you become sleepy because you have accumulated enough of this sleep chemical called adenosine that needs to be released through the initiation of sleep. And so what you'll find is that the more regular you are with your wake up time, the more regular you just sort of fall into line with becoming sleepy at night within about an hour. So what I usually recommend to folks is don't get so hung up on, I got to go to bed at 10. I see this all the time. People, I mean, everywhere I look, podcast people, ads, get to bed by 10. Okay, well, what if you're not sleepy by 10, right? You know, not everyone is. And if you're not sleepy by 10, and you may have a later chronotype, getting into bed at 10 could actually kind of create an insomnia response because you're not ready to sleep yet. You're not sleepy. Your sleep drive isn't high enough yet. And so if you're in a situation like that, you could be lying there tossing and turning for a couple hours because you're not really wired to be sleepy until midnight, right? Mm-hmm. So what I usually try to coach my clients on is have a sleep window, have like an hour that you kind of want to make your target for going to bed. That's a lot more realistic than get to bed at 10, right? Second thing I would say as far as helping to entrain our circadian rhythm is getting morning sunlight as soon as we wake up. So within basically with about an hour of waking up. And I recently discovered this wonderful app that I've been using myself religiously, introducing to clients and talking about on podcasts. It's a free app called Circadian. I think you can go to circadianlife.com to learn more about it, but it's this wonderful app where you enter in your location geographically, and it will basically give you all of the times that are important for light management. So it'll tell you when the sunrise is coming up so that you can make sure that you're out within, you know, a half hour or so of the sunrise. It'll let you know when something called UVA rise happens. That is when the sun is on the 10 to 30 degree angle. And that is the period in the morning when you get the hormone and neurotransmitter benefits that help you with mood and focus. So that's amazing. And then after that, it'll show you when the UVB rays are happening to give you the vitamin D. So essentially it all boils down to getting outside at certain points of the day really strategically to get those hormonal and neurotransmitter benefits. And then we want to think about the nighttime, right? This app will alert you when the sun sets. So you can actually get outside and experience some of that red light effect that's happening at sunset. And we want to be really mindful when the sun is setting to adjust our indoor lighting accordingly, because what we've kind of historically been doing since the invention of the light bulb is we've been having days that are too dark and nights that are too bright. So we kind of need to flip that over. And once the sun sets, dim our lights in our homes, like flip off the overhead lights and instead use a table lamp or light some candles. Because when you are having all of that bright or blue light at night, it is going to end up suppressing your melatonin release, which we need to actually kind of prepare for sleep. The whole circadian thing is, you know, a great place to start, because these are all the things I've told you. These are all things that we can control ourselves. We don't have to buy anything. Like with all the things I've said, you don't have to buy anything.
No.
Which is wonderful.
That is an awesome tip. Thank you for that. So grateful to hear all that. And I suspect all of those little information bombs you just dropped, I can feel my listeners going, oh my God, I didn't know that. Holy cow, I didn't know that. So thank you for that super hot tip. I will be downloading that app as soon as possible myself. I started that experiment last spring, where I was allowing that low angle blue, I think it's low angle blue yellow, isn't it, on the spectrum?
Yeah.
From sunrise in, and it made a shocking difference to how much energy I felt during the day, how rested I felt. I have a pretty consistent wake up and sleep schedule. But you know what's interesting? I do want to ask you, you know, how you handle this. So where I live in the Canadian Rocky Mountains, at this time of the year, the sun rises somewhere around 5 a.m. and goes to sleep sunset around 11.
Yeah.
So the chances of me seeing a sunset, it doesn't. Sunrise, yes, I get up with the sun. But, you know, if I get up at 4:30 in the morning, then I'm not up till 11 p.m. So like, how do you account for things like this?
Well, I think you just kind of have to work with what you've got. Like, you don't want to do anything outlandish. But I think, I think what you're doing sounds perfect. And one thing I forgot to mention, important point, is when you're going out and getting this light exposure during the day, especially in the morning, you want to avoid having anything over your eyes. Like a lot of, when I take my walks in the morning, I see a lot of people with their sunglasses on and it's not even sunny, you know? And the reason why is because when we have sunglasses on, it blocks the natural light from hitting our retinas. And that light that hits the retinas sends a signal to our SCN, our suprachiasmatic nucleus, which is our circadian pacemaker. And that is sort of like the firing gun of all these hormonal and neurotransmitter benefits that I just talked about. So you're kind of doing yourself a disservice if you're walking around all the time outside with sunglasses. And I get a lot of pushback on this with people. They're like, well, it's bright. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. I've got,
but
really
that's
light.
The point.
Yeah. I mean, I've got really light eyes. And I mean, I grew up with like the cool designer shades. And, you know, I thought it was really cool and fashionable to have these like sunglasses on all the time. And yeah, they look cute and everything, but you can train yourself to live without sunglasses, and kind of you become adapted when you kind of take them away. Now, I will say, when I go to the beach or the pool, I will sometimes need them to, I'll have them on my, kind of prop them up on my head like a headband, and then put them on and off if it gets so bright that I'm kind of like blinded, or if you're driving. I mean, you know, you want to have some common sense with this. If there's a lot of glare when you're driving, you just put on the shades, no problem. But if you're just out strolling, you don't need them. You can carry them if you want, if you get like blinded by the sun, if it's really bright, but you can train yourself to walk around and be exposed without the sunglasses on all the time.
That's
Trust me,
super
because
empowering
my
information.
eyes are really light and I get it, because I was usually, and at some points, so sensitive, and you will adapt.
Yeah, that's great information. So I want to bring up the subject of heart rate variability when it comes to sleep and recovery. And of course, for those of us that, you know, have played with the devices, you kind of see how on the, for me, I know this is true. When I see days where my HRV is low, then I get the sense that, okay, something happened last night before I went to bed. Usually it's I ate late, or I was feeling some stress. So I have a no screen policy after about 8 o'clock PM, knowing that bedtime is 9. So I just turn all of those off. But if something has caused me to look at a computer or something for whatever reason, then I will notice in my HRV in particular, things are quite different. So first of all, tell us what HRV is and what it means for sleep and recovery.
Yeah. So HRV is heart rate variability, and it's basically the time in between our heartbeats. So with our heart rate, we kind of typically want it to be low, but with our HRV, we want it to be high. And it's a really good indicator of how rested and recovered we are. All of the things you said were spot on, and we can actually really influence our HRV during the day and night, you know, by eating earlier, by avoiding alcohol. I know alcohol, like when I look at my Oura Ring, whoa, if I have alcohol, my HRV is in the tank.
Yes.
Stressful conversations before bed, stressful content before bed, excessive light before bed. All of these things really play into how our HRV is overnight. And I mean, I absolutely do know that, you know, I feel so much better when the HRV is at a high level than when it is low. You will usually feel the difference, and you're nodding like, yes,
yes,
you know this.
I do.
How it feels.
It's like a resilience piece is the best way I can describe it.
It's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like on days where my HRV is been high overnight, so I'm well recovered, I am more at peace. I am more nimble. I am mentally nimble. I'm more able to get things done, you know, if it's a work day sort of thing. Yeah. So please
now,
carry
on. Are you wearing a sleep tracker?
I've got an Oura Ring. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I thought I saw on your finger.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
The Oura does a pretty good job of tracking the, now I've only used the Oura as a sleep tracker, so I don't know how the other ones show all this, but interestingly that you'll know the Oura Ring has this new daytime stress tracker. And it's, I don't know, I've looked at mine and I'm kind of like, it doesn't always seem accurate, because there've been days where it says high daytime stress. And it's like a Saturday when I'm off, when I'm just chilling out, you know, I'm like, I don't understand how it's showing that I'm stressed out during the day. But then sometimes it's obviously showing stress. I mean, my puppy ran away from home a few weeks ago, and
oh my God,
she was gone for an hour and a half. And I looked the next day at my daytime stress score. And during the time she was away, it was like high alert stress.
I'm sure.
And then of course, you know, if you're doing exercise or a sauna, you'll see the stress spike hit, but you have to be aware that that's normal. That's like our physiological response. It's a natural response, and not to be, you know, worried about that whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I found really interesting, because my husband wears the Whoop strap, because he's more interested in the recovery after exercise. For me, I use the Oura because I'm more interested in sleep tracking. Although I've definitely had to not be so focused on it if I feel stressed out, because it can be another element of stress if I allow it to be. So I literally look at it like numbers. And then I go, okay, it says my recovery is low. How do I feel? Actually, I feel pretty good. Okay, I'm going to go with how I feel rather than let the machine tell me, you know?
Yes, I love that you said that, because I get so many questions about sleep trackers. Should I get one? Should I not get one? And really my advice is, if you're going to get one, now the people that I feel do well with them are the people that are pretty decent sleepers already. They don't have a sleep disorder and they want to just kind of take their sleep from a B to an A. They just want to kind of bump it up a notch. And if there are people who are able to look at the data and make behavioral changes based on the data, then they're a great candidate. So for example, mm-hmm. you know, with the alcohol, if I have more than two drinks, I'll see that score. And it actually has driven me to reduce my alcohol substantially because
me too.
I not only do I not like seeing the score, but I don't like how I feel in the morning.
Oh,
I feel
yeah.
like shit.
Yes, yes. That's
you can
right.
Bleep that out if you want.
No, but, no, please. But we speak this language. It's all good.
So if you're that kind of person, the sleep tracker can be a great tool. Now, where we run into trouble with the sleep trackers is with like most of my clients who have insomnia. And they get very anxious when they see their REM sleep or their deep sleep score lower, or they didn't get enough sleep. They get even yeah. actually more anxious, and it can backfire on their
yes.
sleep. So when I work with people like that who come to me with a sleep tracker, I say, look, just put the sleep tracker away for a while. We don't need it. And your point was so wonderful, Fiona, because when we see the data, what we really want to focus on is not necessarily the numbers, but how do we feel? That is actually the biggest piece of information that we should pay attention to, is how do we feel in the morning versus, and they've even done studies that show that when people are shown their score and it doesn't reflect what they felt, they kind of act the opposite way.
Yes.
So it
yes.
becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy for
Absolutely.
A lot of people. One tip that I have for people who are sort of like on that borderline of getting a little bit too concerned with their scores is wear your tracker every night, but then download the results once a week so that you can look at it from a more trends perspective versus like each single day. Mm-hmm. That way you get a little distance from it, and it helps mm-hmm. you kind of manage getting too attached to the data.
I like that. I like that. So I have two things to say that I want to share about HRV that I've seen myself. So looking at my own tracking, one of the things that seems to make the biggest difference on where my HRV is, other than the obvious ones like alcohol at dinner, forget it. Like it, you're
yeah.
right. It just take, it's helped me do the same thing, because not only do I feel like shit, and then I take a day to recover. And this is after one glass of wine. We're not talking a huge amount of alcohol. Some of us are just more sensitive to it. It's really helped me go understand that if I have a drink with my dinner, I'm going to probably sacrifice my sleep a little bit. And then I can make decisions based on that. Okay, well, I don't have anything going on tomorrow. I can have a nap, whatever. So sometimes that is the decision I make. But one of the things that seems to have made a big difference in elevating my HRV, and I just sort of discovered this recently, is having very specific snuggle time with my husband right at bedtime. You know,
I
not terrible.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And it has, I was listening to a podcast recently. It was a neuroscientist talking about how co-sleeping is really good for HRV and recovery and brain health, et cetera. And my thoughts were, yeah, that's, you're saying that because you're 27. Wait till you're 50 and you sleep really lightly and your partner snores enough to wake the neighbor. And then you're like, maybe this arrangement needs to change, right? So I sort of extrapolated from that conversation. I thought, I wonder if we'd be really, really specific about snuggle time. And it has seemed to make a huge difference with my HRV. Isn't that fascinating?
That is, I've never actually heard anyone say that before, but it makes total sense.
It does, doesn't it?
I love it because it benefits everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's free. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no downside. There's no sacrifice you had to make. He's happy. Yep. You're happy. It's wonderful. Love it.
Okay. I'm going to bring this up because I can't resist, because I know we're all Gen Xers here in this conversation. Do you remember? I think it was Chandler and Monica in Friends. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Where was the hug and release?
Yes.
Hug and roll. Oh my God. My husband loves doing that one.
That is so funny. Oh my goodness.
I know somebody listening right now is going, I know exactly what she's talking about. Okay. The other thing I wanted to say about HRV is this was a medical doctor friend of mine told me this. He delivered plenty of babies. And when they were monitoring the baby and during labor and delivery, and baby wasn't coming out, and they saw the HRV start, the heart rate variability start to decline, that's when they knew they had a short amount of time to get baby out. And they had to go to a C-section. Wow. So the reason I share that is because it really helped me understand. I mean, I could read all the academic material on why HRV is important. As a doctor, I understand that. But when he said it like that, I understood it in a really different way. HRV is a measurement of our ability to adapt to our environment in a survival fashion. Mm. And when you put it like that in an obstetric kind of scenario, then people understand it.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. And another thing that I just thought about for boosting your HRV is breath work. So I recently was sent a little breath work coach device called Moonbird. It's really cool. I don't have it in front of me, but it does look like something that you would use on yourself to make yourself happy. Can I just say that? It looks like, it very much looks like that. So when I do like reels about it and stories, people are like, what you got? You're showing me your private toys or whatever? But it's so cool because you can use it on its own without an app. Like I'll just kind of watch TV at night and use it. Or you can use the app. And the app is interesting because it gives you biofeedback, so real-time feedback. And you can actually see your HRV in real time as you're doing the breathwork training. And so if you're really consistent over time, they have shown that it can help increase your HRV. So breathwork is a free tool. Moonbird is not a free tool. You have to buy that. But the point is that's another tool that we can use day or night to help increase our HRV. Because sometimes you're having a moment during the day. We've all been there, right? When things are just kind of awry and everyone wants us, and you can sit down and do 2 minutes of breath work and increase your HRV, lickety split.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love this. I work with concussion patients in my office, rehabilitating concussion. And that is my number one tool to share with my neuro patients. I've done that work for 13 years at this point. The number one tool I give them is the let's do some breathing. Let me show you how to do it. Let me show you how to do it intentionally, et cetera. And what I find is true pretty much across the board with patients, very much so with neuro patients, but I see it in my chiropractic practice as well, is just how poorly we breathe. We get this sort of stress breathing that happens. We breathe the top third of our lungs. We don't take the time to really take a proper breath into the bottom of the lungs where the gas exchange happens. And so I think there's a lot to be said about these breathing tools. So please share some with us if you would like.
Yeah. Different breathing exercises you could do. They're so easy. There's a few. There's box breathing. There is 4-7-8 breathing. Mm-hmm. What's another breathing? I'm blanking now, but they're like, if you Google breathwork exercises, are a plenty that you can choose from. Yes. And what I usually will share like a bunch with my clients and say, try a couple, see what resonates with you. Because sometimes what I've found is that the breathwork where you actually have to count, it can kind of work for or against you. Sometimes people get a little stressed out by the counting part. Other people like that because it kind of like makes them bored and fall asleep. So you kind of have to kind of pick the one that you like best, because they don't all work the same for everybody.
Yeah. Interesting. As I listen to you speak, I'm struck by how much sleep is affected by our psychology.
Oh, yes. So much.
Talk about that a little bit, please.
Well, I think that a lot of times people have this kind of label on themselves. They label themselves as like a bad sleeper, right? And I see that all the time with people that I talk to. They come to me, they're like, I'm a terrible sleeper. And they'll say really inflammatory things about their sleep as we're in sessions together. And I will sometimes have to stop them and say, did you hear how you just described your sleep, or what kind of sleeper you are? Like, let's kind of change the terminology that we are using. And so I don't want to be someone who says, like, if you're saying to me, I'm a shitty sleeper or whatever, I'm not going to say, oh, Fiona, you're an excellent sleeper. Tell yourself, do a mantra, I'm an excellent sleeper. Because to me, that's a little bit of a toxic positivity. But if you can present that in a more neutral way, so like basically say, you know, I'm having some challenges sleeping, but I'm confident that with the work that I'm doing and the skills that I'm learning, that I can get my sleep back on track. That has a much more neutral, less emotionally loaded quality than I'm a terrible sleeper. If we can change really our mindset about sleep in the very beginning of our journey on getting better sleep, it really opens the door for all these other changes to happen.
Yeah.
Another thing is that I often hear people say about their children, my son or my daughter is a terrible sleeper. We have to be really careful about how we talk around our children about their sleep, because we don't want them to grow up with that label and them thinking I'm a terrible sleeper and thinking that about themselves through adulthood, because those labels follow us.
Yes.
So just a you know, little word of caution, if you're raising children, just be careful, you know, and be careful about how you describe your own sleep if it's not great around your children.
Comes back to that self-compassion thing, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And we can, in the same way, you can look at your sleep tracker and say, oh, the sleep tracker says I should feel like crap, so I'm going to go about the business of feeling like crap. If you spend your life saying, I'm a light sleeper, I'm a crappy sleeper, I wake in the night, I'm this, I'm that, whatever, guess what? Your brain goes about the business of finding that in your experience. I mean, words are so powerful that but we're not given the toolkit to use that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I see you wearing an Apollo device, yes?
Yes, you're right.
Yes.
Is it?
Their CEO is going to be coming on the show in a few episodes' time, David Rabin, to talk about the technology, et cetera. How do you like it?
I like it a lot. I wear it during the day while I'm working. Obviously, here we are on a podcast. I'm doing the social mode because we're having a conversation. I don't actually use it when I sleep.
Okay.
People are like, what? I use it when I'm winding down, like during the wind down routine, I have it on relaxed mode, but I've never actually, there is a feature. It's a new feature and it's sort of AI based. You'll learn all about, your audience will learn all about this soon, but essentially you pay it like a little bit of an upcharge and you can wear it at night and it can kind of sense when you're about to wake up and it'll deliver the little vibrations to you.
Wow.
So they have some really good data on
that's cool.
It helping you get back to sleep if you wake up. So, I mean, I think it could be a great tool for someone's sleep. I just haven't really felt the need to kind of pay the extra money, quite frankly, to do it, you know?
Yeah, there's so many options now, right?
Yeah.
It's not just one subscription now. We've all got so many.
They add up quick.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. Well, let's talk about something I'm just dying to hear your thoughts on is something we do talk about on the show quite a bit is nervous system regulation and vagus nerve tone and safety. How much does this play into the sleep, the insomnia issue that we're seeing, especially with women at midlife?
Oh, so much. It plays into it so much, because if we are missing that foundational feeling of safety and security, it's going to be hard to get our sleep in a good spot. You know, you can do all of the sleep hygiene, you can do all of the things that we talk about for better sleep, but to have that sense of safety and security is so key. And I definitely have some clients who come to me and who don't have that. So we have to really lean into some of the tools, you know, especially the breath work and the meditation and, you know, the things that help the vagus nerve. Those are paramount when you're having those anxiety types of reactions and you have a lot of sleep anxiety. Yeah, for sure. It's foundational. Yeah.
Well, you know, it makes sense biologically. If we were sleeping in a cave and somebody had to be alert enough to protect the family, then, you know, you're going to have that lack of safety is going to keep you awake or in a light sleep mode. And I have suspected for a while that this was kind of all part of what was happening. You know, and why does it happen at perimenopause? You know, Morgan, that's the question I have. And I think it's probably just you have so much changing. You have this neuroendocrine reboot that can take 20 years for us. We're really just learning. Like, I mean, really newly learning how big a deal this transition is.
Oh, yeah. It's
and
huge.
I just... Yeah, and I suspect that this safety thing plays a much bigger role than as we learn about that as well.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's probably an area that's not talked about as much as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So good. I'm glad you brought it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big one. I like to see more discussion of it, I think, and whether that's for me, sure, I'm talking about it all the time, but there's so many elements to this menopause discussion. That right, and it's different for everybody. So I think this is part of the challenge of rule-bound medicine,
mm-hmm.
is that if you're expecting, you know, A plus B equals C, well, that's fine for some women, but you know, other women are going to have very different experiences. Some women don't have any troubles with sleep at all. Some women don't have a single hot flash.
Yeah,
right? Such a very different.
Yeah, we're all having really, really different experiences for sure. Because I'm talking to a lot of people just in casual conversation, and I'm running, you know, I'm seeing people who like literally have no menopausal symptoms at all. And then mm-hmm. some that are just wrecked, you know, by having so many. So it's very broad in terms of like the symptoms and what to expect.
Mm-hmm. I have suspected for some time that a woman who rates higher on the ACEs score is likely to have more symptoms, which.
Yeah, I think that's been shown to be true.
Is that right?
I do. I do believe that they've shown that in studies. If you look at the ACEs, if they're scoring higher, they're going to have harder, like more issues with vasomotor symptoms and mm-hmm. just difficulties overall.
I need to find that paper.
Yeah, I know. I've heard it referenced in several podcasts, but I never really actually looked at the research. But yeah, I mean, we're very like I think we're like 14 times more likely to have anxiety and depression in menopause. I mean, so many things are you know at risk, you know, of happening,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard. It's definitely hard to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so many stressors on us during this phase of our life, being in the sandwich generation, you know, mm-hmm. often being responsible for kids, their safety and well-being. And then on the other end, being responsible for the safety and well-being of our parents. So mm-hmm. we're often just juggling so many roles and wearing so many hats that I
Absolutely.
Think that this the anxiety and stress of that is very palpable in many of my clients mm-hmm. for sure, dealing with mm-hmm. all these competing demands
mm-hmm.
in career. You know, a lot of the women I'm seeing mm-hmm. are very successful entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. Business women, you know,
we're at
and
the
they've
pinnacle
got
right now.
You're at the pinnacle at this, you know, 40 to 50 and beyond. It's just, you've got a lot of work responsibilities in many mm-hmm. ways. So mm-hmm. there's just a lot coming at you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. By the way, for the listeners, ACEs study was the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, and there's a series of questions. And if you score, I believe it's over 4, then you're more likely to have certain chronic disease experiences, autoimmune issues. You're saying vasomotor issues as well, which is hot flashes, basically. And so that's what we're talking about. And you can just put ACEs in capital letters in a Google search and you'll get all kinds of information on it. It's quite fascinating to look at it for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Okay. Morgan, if people want to know more about you and your work, how do they go about finding you?
Yes. Yeah, so my website is morganadamswellness.com. I have a free, what I call discovery call or sleep clarity call. So if somebody wants to talk about their sleep possibly working with me as a sleep coach, they can book that call. I also have a free mini course called Sleep Reset Solution, which basically helps people come up with a good morning and evening routine, because those bookends of your day are very critical for getting good sleep. So I'm also on Instagram. So, and that's where you found me, or yes. I found you. You found me after I emailed you.
Yes. And I checked you out. It's great. Yeah. Your Instagram is amazing. So please tell my listeners where to find you there.
Thank you. It's morganadams.wellness. And you can find me doing some stories and reels. And I appreciate you, you following my content and
yes,
and connecting with me there. That's great.
It's great. It's animated. I love it. It feels very authentic. And I love that too. So in a world where sometimes you don't see that so much, yours is not one of those spaces. So thank you for showing up and being who you are and for bringing the goods to the chat today. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. I'm so delighted we could make this work.
Indeed, indeed. So I've got a question that I ask all my guests, the last question of the show, and it goes like this. Knowing what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
Oh, I would say stop caring so much about what people think about you. Because, you know, people really, they actually are quite concerned with themselves and not really paying as much attention to you as you think they are. That's probably the biggest thing that I would tell my younger self.
I say, amen, sister. It's so true. My mother used to say that to me. She used to say, people don't care about what you're doing. They're too busy worried about their own stuff.
They're true.
Bananas, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyways, well, thank you again for coming on the show. I really appreciate you dispensing this wonderful information and useful, helpful information to my listeners. Morgan Adams, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much.
The information and other content provided in this show, or in any linked materials, is not intended and should not be construed as medical advice, nor is the information a substitute for professional medical expertise or treatment. We are doctors, but we aren't your doctor. Seek your doctor's opinion. If you or any other person has a medical concern, you should consult with your healthcare provider or seek other professional medical treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something that you have heard in this podcast or in any linked materials. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or emergency services immediately. The opinions and views expressed on this page and in this show have no relation to those of any academic, hospital, health practice, or other institution. Thank you.